Okay, the title of this message is The Danger of Pie, P-I-E, and Our Awesome Reward. That occurred to me because I'm judging, maybe, if my wife allows it, the pie contest at the feast. But anyway, as an elderly man said, I believe it was the first sermon I heard in the Worldwide Church of God, "Brethren, why are we here?" Some of you know which elderly man I'm referring to who made that great statement. And he started all his Feast of Tabernacles that way. I believe that was 1966. Why are we here? We're here because we have an unbelievably fabulous future. But before we look at that future, I want to look at the state of the world, or at least one aspect of it. Western society is becoming very decadent. There was a photo, we saw it at a meeting this week in Cape, from the Daily Mirror in Britain. On one side, they showed a big cathedral in England. And by the way, they even have it's the state religion, Church of England, Anglican Church of England. So they even have state taxes to support this beautiful cathedral. There are like 7 elderly people there on one Sunday. And then they showed a picture of a mosque somewhere in London. And there were so many people bowed down, you know, prostrate, you know how they do, that they actually were blocking 2 streets outside the mosque. It was so full. And the writer, you know, I think it was the Daily Mirror in Britain, was contrasting those 2 scenes. Because visually, it's a powerful scene. And what he was saying was that, and then we also got another article quoting a major bishop in that church. He's saying the Church of England is dying. It'll be dead in a few years. I mean, that was his words, not mine. That's the way things are going. Now, we pulled these figures up this morning. Based on the baptisms in England, baptized members in England of their church, only 4% attend church on a regular basis. 4%! And I think you could go to Bavaria and some of the other places in Europe and France, and you'll get percentages like that throughout Europe of the major Christian denominations. Not all of them, but most of them. And the reason for that is pie, P-I-E. I maybe did a little bit of adjustment to get this pie, but let's look at the pie here. The P stands for prosperity. When life is prosperous, and Western Europe, more or less, now they have a big welfare state, so they get a lot of freebies, but still, all said and done, the people there live in prosperity relative to the rest of the world. They live in prosperity. They live at ease. They're not worried about their next meal. And when you're at ease, isn't there a subconscious desire to say, what do I need God for? Because, what have I got to worry about? I'm getting a government check or whatever comment. I'm at ease. I'm in prosperity. What do I need God for? the intellectual part of it. And I'm just going to throw my way of putting the intellectual part of it this way. Miseducation. The miseducation of the people in the Western world. The miseducation basically teaches that there is no God. It's evolution. They've actually, as part of the global warming education in England, and I've actually read articles, they're telling young English women, have been doing this for several decades, that man is the great polluter of the planet. If you love Earth, do not have kids. And a number of young English women, you know, said, well, I'm not going to have any kids because people are bad for the planet. And actually, their population as a percentage in Western Europe of the native-born is declining because they're not having enough kids to, I think it's 1.2 for most of Western Europe, the birth rate per female in the appropriate years. It's not enough to replace. I think it takes 2.2 to replace yourself. How they get to 0.2, I don't know, but that's what the demographers say, to replace yourself. So they're dying out physically as well. And, of course, there is abortion. well, the baby's not convenient. Also, they teach there are no absolute truths. There just are no absolute truths. And they teach a lot of other stuff like socialism, humanism, and other things. And they run down their own history. Western civilization history is really run down. We're doing the same thing in America. It's mostly in colleges, but it's now, thanks to Common Core, it's moving into the high school, junior highs, and elementary. Basically, they teach that America's an evil nation, and they're overlooking all the great things that America's achieved. And that's what I call lies, if you like to look at it. It's intellectual lies, or miseducation, if you like that term. And the last E is enlightenment. It relates to the intellectual. We live in an enlightened world that has religious freedom. Well, when you have religious freedom, you're not concerned about your religion because it's free. I can go or not go. Nobody's going to, you know, do anything to me if I don't do it. But in the third world, the opposite is happening. They are very, very religious, and, well, they're going in two directions. Those that have a Christian background are looking into the Bible and becoming more committed to Christ. Now, those that are Islamic are looking into the Quran and becoming more committed to the caliphate. And that includes violence if necessary. That actually is justified in the Quran. We actually had a good lecture on that from a professor who says he had to admit before he said it, this is not the official statement of the university, so they didn't get in trouble. But he went through the specifics in the Quran. Maybe I'll just mention it a little bit. They have, in the way the Quran is, when Muhammad was small, he had a lot of nice things to say. And some things copied, you know, what was in Christianity and Judaism. And then when he became a top warlord, he switched. And so they say in the Quran that Muhammad changed his mind, abrogated. And so, and they know which ones are later ones. And his later statements, the infidel, if you're, notice to be innocent, you have to support Muhammad, or Islam means to be obedient, you know, to the religion. So if you're not obedient, you're not innocent, and you can slaughter, enslave, or do other bad things to people that are not innocent. It's in there. And believe me, I heard one man say that even if this ISIL may have gone too far and they're defeated, it's the thinking behind it. Some other group will come out and replace them. Maybe they'll be a little more clever than this group will, but it's a constant pressure. And I can see where the king of the north is going to be pressured by the king of the south. Because it does make sense. Islam believes in their religion. And so as the people get into it, committed, that they must force everybody to be obedient to Islam, to Allah, as they see it. And violence is appropriate. Believe me, it's there. And many of them believe it. You're thinking, well, I know they say on television, I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but I know they say on television Islam is a religion of peace and that they're perverting the Quran. Now, maybe they're being a little more violent than they have to be. I would concede that. I heard stories just this past week on the radio where they actually slaughtered babies in front of their parents and other stuff that I won't mention now. But violence is in there against the infidel. And that's not making that up. And, you know, the guy went through specifics the other day. We heard him. We heard another man. They quote the specific scriptures. My point is, the third world, they're either moving powerfully in support of Christianity or in the support of Islam. And because of two things, and I'm going to opposite pi, these are PP. That's my little analogy. The PP stands for poverty and persecution. And they're opposite pi. When I oppose them, you see how they're opposite. And I saw Miriam Ibrahim on television the other day, and the interviewer asked her, well, when they told you they're going to give you 100 lashes and hang you, this is a pregnant woman now with a little baby, They're going to do that to you because, now the way they defined it, she said, I've always been a Christian. My wife was, yeah, but your dad, maybe you didn't know him, but your dad was Islamic. And by their definition, if your dad's Islamic, that means you committed a mortal sin by converting to another religion. And so she was, they had appealed it, and Islamic court said, you're going to die. She said, why don't you just tell them what they want to hear, condemn Christ, say you're converting to Islam, they'll let you out of prison, and maybe, you know, in time you can escape the country, and then, you know, you can do what you want to do. And Miriam Ibrahim said, my faith is my life. I could no more deny Christ to save myself. And I mean, you have to be proud of her. And she claims there are a lot of people in those countries under that kind of oppression who are facing that threat. And I remember seeing a lot of the Christians in a refugee camp on the border of the Kurdish land. And there's this mountain between them and ISIL. And rather than convert or suffer certain terrible penalties, apparently maybe 100,000. The numbers are kind of confused because there's so much chaos, nobody knows the exact number. But they rushed to the mountain, anything to get away, but they were not going to deny their Christian faith under pressure. Now, these people, for the most part, live in poverty in the third world, parts of Asia, Africa, and South America. They live in poverty, but they are committed. I got to keep one of my first Feast of Tabernacles on the Army with the Church of God in the Philippines. And they still remember me and sent me some pictures a few years ago by email of myself there. And I looked young and handsome back then. But anyway, you got to remember those days. But you would really like those people. Especially the people in the Philippines. Maybe that's just my personal bias. But they have a strong commitment to Christ. But they face persecution and poverty. Over there, mostly poverty. But there is some persecution there, too. Here's the interesting thing about Christianity. If you really look at it, persecution tends to make people's faith not go down, but go up. Let me say that again. Because it's the opposite of what everybody thinks. Persecution tends to make people's faith go up, not down. And those people are stronger. Let me just mention something from the Anglican Church's history. When the Anglican Church, the decade or two prior to this one, decided that they were going to kind of move away from Bible and biblical standards and do a lot of things and teach things which are unbiblical, their counterparts in Africa said, no. And they became more biblical. The opposite of what you would have expected. The poverty, I think they can understand certain things in the Bible, like the Good Samaritan and the widow's mite, because they live in poverty. And they have to worry about their next meal and a lot of other things. And they are stronger spiritually than we are. We in the West are the ones in danger. Now, I realize America's numbers aren't as bad as Western Europe. But we're moving in the same direction. We just aren't quite there yet, but we're moving fast to catch up with them going down the toboggan slide. But they don't reject Christ in the third world because of poverty and persecution. It's a pressure, and that pressure helps them become more Christian. And they say Christianity is growing in the third world. In China, I'm going to mention the China situation, because they say a lot of Chinese people watch, according to our webmaster, watch these tapes when we put them online. Next to America, they were the largest group watching it. So if any people out there in China, ni hao. But in China, you know, the communist, it's an atheist country, still is officially. They didn't allow any Christianity or any religion at all. And there are stories of people when they caught you with the Bible or being a Christian, you went to a re-education camp. Doesn't that sound good? It's one of those prisons like you've heard about in the, you know, the communist empire. Horrible places. But when they opened the door, because they realized they needed more morality, and Christianity teaches morality, they said, we don't have to fear from Christianity. And maybe they wanted to be nice to the Americans and buy all their product. They said, you Christians can come out of the closet. They were shocked. There were 70-plus million Christians. 5% of the Chinese population were Christians. And according to our church in Chicago, where we have connection with some people there and another church in America, some of them have the same doctrines we have. What they discovered was they had secret house churches that had survived all those years of persecution. And the persecution made them stronger, not weaker. Now, here's where it gets confusing. Some of the churches are still secret because they don't trust the government. I have this article. I'm not even sure what the Chinese government is doing. They say the federal government says it's all right to be a Christian. We need morality. But this is in eastern China, the Wenzhou province, which has, I guess, the biggest Christian church. As one writer says, it's the Jerusalem of Christianity in China. Their church was raided at night by the regional police, and they're being attacked. And no one's quite sure why. It's like the Chinese government, on one hand, is saying it's okay to be a Christian, but on the other hand, they're oppressing Christians in certain places at certain times. So I'm not sure what China's policy is. But I suspect from what I've read, though I can't be sure, some of the Christians in China, there may be more than the 70 million, are still staying secret because they don't trust the government. They say, yeah, they say it's okay to be a Christian now. They may change their mind in 4 or 5 years, and if you get your name listed, you may go off to the gulag. So we don't really know. I was talking to a Protestant minister, major church here in Southern Illinois, I think it was yesterday or the day before. He was saying they have secret missionaries, and some other churches do to certain parts of the world, including the Middle East, where it would cost you your life if they find out you're a Christian. You know, if you're in Iran, they'll literally just hang somebody if they find out you're a Christian. Or Saudi Arabia, they catch you with this book, it's a death penalty. But let's compare China to Japan. Japan has been, American, democratized since the end of the war, open, enlightened, prosperous. Japan only has 2% Christians. China has 5 or more. And China was under the PPs, poverty and persecution. It does seem like being enlightened and free and prosperous is a hindrance to your Christian growth. I mean, that's the weirdest thing. You wouldn't think that, would you? But that's what the record of the world would seem to say. Let's go to Deuteronomy 4. I want to look at one of the, Deuteronomy is the second telling of the law and what the Israelites went through. And Moses is being philosophical in this book and warning the Israelites of problems. This is Deuteronomy 4. We'll pick it up in verse 9. So Moses is telling the Israelites, and by the way, he wrote this that last 40 days before the Israelites crossed into the promised land and before he went up on the mountain to die. So it's kind of like, this is my last warning to you all. Verse 9, only take heed, Deuteronomy 4:9. To yourself, and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things which your eyes have seen. Because at least some of those people might remember walking through the Red Sea, and God is a fire inside the cloud on top of Mount Sinai, and the ground shaking, and all kinds of miracles, tons of miracles in those first 5 books. It's amazing how those Israelites saw that, and they didn't want to obey God and believe in God and trust God. I mean, that's kind of the amazing thing. I think it was amazing to God, too. God said, wait a minute, what's wrong with these people? Anyway, so he says, do not forget God. Isn't that what prosperity tends to do? You don't need God, you forget God. Which thine eyes have seen, unless you depart with your heart all the days of your life. But teach, and I'm emphasizing the word teach, I got to circle in my Bible, but teach them to your sons and to your grandsons. Now, have you noticed that one of the first things that the evil influences in the world do is capture education? And I saw this on, I think it was Glenn Beck's show. ISIL, which is ISIS, has taken over at least a big chunk of the Middle East now. And they sent letters, apparently this week, to teachers. They opened up schools in Mosul again next week. And they told the teachers, I wish I had written down everything they said, but here's the essence of it. You're going to teach and act in totally radical Islamism as we see it. There's no teaching of history or philosophy or even certain sciences that they don't approve of. And they're brainwashing their kids, as I see it. And I think they've done that. I think some of the other Islamic groups have done it to varying degrees, too, to hate the infidels. They even have little kids, you know, with little bandoliers of stuff and bombs in their hand, teaching little bitty kids to be suicide bombers and fighters. I'm thinking, in other words, ISIL says, we know where the future is. We're going to capture education to make it radical. Well, let's look at education, even in the enlightened Western world. Like a bird, hasn't education been captured by the far, far left progressives and liberals? And they started with higher education, but then they write the textbooks for the public schools. And I know, just from things I've been told, Common Core is just pumping it up one more level. And if you were to look at most textbooks in college on, say, American history, Western civilization, they'll basically say, Christopher Columbus was evil, America's evil, Western civilization's evil, socialism and radicalism is good, progressivism is wonderful, there is no God, religion is simply for old and superstitious and stupid people. That's pretty much a summation of most of the textbooks. And they have been pushing that poisonous miseducation, enlightenment on. And that means as the years go on, more and more people will be miseducated, really miseducated. I'll bet you, I actually see this Waters World, and I've seen it on Jay Leno's show. They ask people real basic stuff about American history, and you would be amazed. And some of them are college students, too. They're not bums, you know, they're drunk or something. And they who do we fight in the American Revolution? I mean, unbelievable stupid things. Who do we fight in World War II? What's in the Bill of Rights? They have no idea. And they're dumbing them down intentionally. Or the devil's behind it. They probably think it's just progressivism and it's a good thing. If you've heard of that horrible war, Churchill, well, maybe he was more blunt about it, but his kind of thinking is what has captured most of education in the Western world. That kind of weird stupidity. Deuteronomy 8, verse 10. Deuteronomy 8, 10. And when you've eaten and are full, and I want to emphasize the word full. I think he's saying when Israel is prosperous and you've got all the food you need and your barn is full of grapes and apples and you've got all that you need. When you're full, you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he's given you. Beware that you forget not the Lord your God. I think what he's saying is when you're prosperous, that's when you're most likely to forget God because you don't need God. You're not worried about your next meal or safety. People in the third world aren't full, but it tends to drive them closer to God. And we have to beware of forgetting not the Lord your God, and not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command you this day. And then he goes on to elaborate further, but you get the point. When we're full and things are easy, the devil is saying, relax, eat another piece of candy, go with the flow. And his flow, of course, is pie, a lot of food. Now, you're going to say, well, that only affects the world. It doesn't affect us because we know the truth. We see what the devil is doing. If I were the devil, my number one target would be the spiritual Israel, the Church of God. I mean, granted, he's after the world, of course, but he's also after us as much as he possibly can. If I were the devil, I would lull all Christendom, but wherever I could, especially the Church of God, to sleep. Get them to squabble with each other. Get them spiritually lulled into dullness. So they kind of forget stuff. You talk to people who were in the church 30-some years ago. They tell you how dedicated people were. And then you come to today and you think, you start to worry about us a little bit. Here's what I believe the devil's going to do. Now, this part is somewhat speculation on my part, but I want to give it to you anyway. What I think the devil is doing is he's destroying biblical understanding of God as much as he can. He's destroying what is religion as you think of it. And it will be replaced by new guidelines that are non-biblical. You know, it talks about in Daniel about getting rid of God's laws and God's words and worshiping a man. Well, that's going to happen some way, shape, or form. We're getting a new leader, the emperor, the new Caesar. You know, hail Caesar. We're going to get a new Caesar, and people are going to worship a man. And we're saying, but they know better than that. Well, maybe they do. But will they know better than that? A few more years of more miseducation. Let's go to 2 Thessalonians. You probably knew that's where I was going to go, but let's go there anyway. 2 Thessalonians 2:3. Let's see. Did I write down the wrong verse? Oh, there it is. My eye fell on the wrong column. It's verse 2:3. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, meaning the day of the Lord and the end of this age, except there come a falling away first. And this has to be a significant worldwide falling away, or it doesn't fit the context. And that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God. In other words, the old time religions, nope, this is something new, that's called God, or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sits in the temple of God, showing himself, because of course God doesn't see it, that he is God. They're going to worship a man, just like they worshiped Adolf Hitler. But this will be much bigger, much worse. It's coming to the Western world. Why is it going to happen? Verse 10, and with all deceivableness of righteousness in them that perish because they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved. And for this cause, God shall send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie. The miseducation will leave people vulnerable because they don't know anything really about the Bible and a lot of other things. They're going to be easily deluded and they don't really love the truth. They say, what is truth? It doesn't matter, whatever you want it to be. Now, here's a corny joke that'll probably get me in trouble, but I'll tell it anyway. This guy goes into, it's a political cartoon. He goes into the White House for a tour. He looks over at the directory, you know, of activities and meetings, and he sees at various times there's, at 10 o'clock, a war on obesity in the next hour, a war on poverty in the next hour, a war on drugs in the next hour, a war on women in the next hour, a war on the middle class salaries. And then the last item, later in the day, counterterrorism operations. Yeah, listen. Oh, I don't really know what's going to happen in the future. I admit that. But it makes me wonder. I saw one general, and I just think he was right. He said, wouldn't it have been nice if when we announced that we were going to bomb ISIS, even in Syria, he could say we're bombing them right now with a major attack? The more we stall around, the more we allow that horrible state to survive. Think about it. You got to be aggressive. Well, I'm not saying it may depend on what the other countries in the region do, but remember PI, prosperity, the lies and intellectual miseducation, evolution, socialism, humanism. By the way, socialism proven a failure. Look at what happened in the communist empire. It just doesn't work. I was telling my students, I said, here's one way to look at it. If you had two brothers and you were a dad, and one was very industrious, and you taxed away half of his money because he was so prosperous, and you gave half of his money to the other brother who was a bum and didn't want to do anything, you would demotivate both of them. So production would go down. You know, the hardworking brother would say, why should I work so hard? And the bum would say, why should I do anything? That's pretty much, that's why socialism does, you can't redistribute what isn't produced. So if production drops, and that's, and the communism, of course, proved that. But they don't teach that in school. When I tell students that, it's like, that's the first time we ever heard such a thing. I mentioned, what's the significance of the Berlin Wall? They all look. If we have one German student or two, they'll know. But nobody else in the class, with rare exception, have any idea. What's he talking about? That's before my time. They really don't know anything. Now, if you ask them about one of the rock stars, then they probably would know a lot. I can't think of any rock star's name, but you know the ones I'm thinking of. This thing about the football player who overdid the spanking, you know, they're going to use that to create a mindset where you can no longer spank children at all. That's anti-biblical. Think of how wonderful it is to have the undisciplined, unspanked generation. I'll admit, some kids don't need spanking. Some you just talk to them roughly and they behave. But believe me, there are some kids that need it. So what should we do? We see what's going on, so what should we do? Let's go to 2 Timothy verse 1, verse 6. Paul says to Timothy, wherefore I put you in remembrance that you stir up the gift of God which is in you by the putting on of my hands. So what is the gift of God? I say the gift of God is our understanding and whatever talents God has given you. Use them to help God's church and help preach the gospel. And, of course, do all the things that stir up the spirit in you, like pray, study, come to church, go to the feast, come to the holy days. Stay strong in the basics. Hebrews chapter 2. We're going to read Hebrews chapter 2, verse 1 through 3. Hebrews 2:1 reads, therefore, we ought to give more earnest heed to the things which we've heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. Because the devil's strategy is to lull us to sleep, to let them slip. Or as the Baptists say, backsliding. I like that term. Verse 2. For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast in every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense of reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? I'm going to say the word great salvation. Because you can neglect it just by taking it for granted. Take it easy. The devil says, eat another piece of candy and relax. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about being close to God. You can go a couple weeks without prayer. Just relax. Take it easy. And that's what he means by neglect so great a salvation. We have an awesome reward. Let's go to 1 John 3:2. Back a couple books. 1 John 3:2. One of our favorite scriptures, but it's certainly worth remembering. 1 John 3:2 reads, beloved, now are we the sons of God. We're begotten, but not yet born. You know, God begot us in our somewhere where the spirit of man is by his spirit. And it does not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, and we're going to talk about that at the Feast of Trumpets coming up Thursday, and please be here to hear us talk about it. When he shall appear, we shall be like him. I want to emphasize the word like him. We shall be able to see him as he is. You know, Moses couldn't look directly eye to eye with God. He had to have that cloud to protect him because even still Moses glowed, but God is just too bright. But we're going to be in his family. We'll be like him, so we'll be able to see him. Now, think about it, being a baby God. How much greater salvation can there be? You know, 1 Corinthians 6 says we'll judge angels. Wow. I mean, that is little old us. We're going to be baby gods forever. That is good news. And as the Bible says, keep this in mind, in the end, we win. In the end, we win. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 15 for the last scripture. 1 Corinthians 15. We're going to pick it up in verse 52. in the moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump. For the trumpet shall sound, the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible, because boy, I tell you, as you get older, my eyes get worse and other things start to break down. And oh well, when I was young, I could run with all my army equipment on for 2 miles and not even be breathing heavy. Now I can't do any. Anyway, uncorruptible, we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption. This mortal must put on immortality. So when the corruptible shall put on incorruption, and this mortal shall put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your sting? O grave, where is your victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God, which gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. We'll be baby gods. It'll actually be better than Superman. All we have to do is keep the spirit stirred up and don't let the devil suck us asleep.